Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, it's been a rough week for markets after fears that higher inflation could force central banks to raise interest rates sooner sparked a sharp reversal for share prices. And elsewhere, there was a return of familiar rumours that the government could increase tax on pensions to help pay for the pandemic. Is there any more to them this time round? If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. There was a wobble in markets last week after the Federal Reserve, that's the US central bank, made clear it expected rates to have to rise somewhat sooner than previously expected. The reason for that is inflation, which has crept up to 5% in America and is on the rise here as well. The effect on markets was rapid, with several percentage points wiped off markets around the world and many of the assets that had been doing best in the so-called reflation trade suffering the most. To talk it over, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome. First of all, bring us up to speed with markets now. A dramatic fall last week, but somewhat steadier this week.
Yes, indeed. I mean, as you rightly point out, this was all really about what was going on at the Federal Reserve. That seems to be the big story in markets at the moment. And the really interesting thing about it was that we didn't hear anything last week from the Federal Reserve that we shouldn't have expected. We've seen inflation creeping up. And we know what that means in terms of monetary policy. We know that while central banks can sit back in the short term and let inflation rise, at some point they're going to move in and take measures that they have to. And that, of course, is all they suggested. And so I think what's really interesting is that the market reaction was rather bigger than you might have expected from what were frankly quite measured, quite cautious comments from the Federal Reserve. And that probably tells us something interesting about the extent still to which financial markets are dependent on stimulus from central banks and governments.
Yeah, and going back to that Fed meeting last week and exactly what they said, this was to do with the number of members of the Fed who expected rate rises and when they expected them, right?
Yeah, that's right. So there's this thing called the dot plots, which is an indication of what the individual rate setting members of the Open Markets Committee, what their forecasts are for when interest rates are going to move. And it's called dot plots because they are dots plotted on a chart. And it gives a sort of visual representation of when rates are expected to move. And people watch these things really closely. Every time there's a meeting of the Federal Reserve, this dot plots chart is scrutinized by the markets. And if there's a shift towards an earlier expectation of interest rates moving, that's generally taken badly by the market, and that is what happened last week. So we had a reasonably significant jump in the numbers of rate setters who expect a rise in rates as early as next year, 2022, and an even bigger rise in the number of rate setters who expect one or more rises in 2023. So overall, it just brought forward by a few months the expectation of when interest rates are going to start rising. And of course, as we know, rising interest rates tend to be bad for markets.
Yeah, and let's dwell on that because well, as simply as you can, Tom, because this can get a bit complicated, what was the effect on different asset prices?
Yes. Let's start with the ones which are most directly affected by rising interest rates. So the currencies tend to reflect expectations about interest rates rising in the first instance. And so what we've seen over the last week is quite a strong rise in the value of the dollar compared to other currencies. And that's actually a bit of a reversal, because the longer term picture for the dollar is not that positive, partly because of all the money that's being spent by governments and a rise in the deficits. That tends to be bad for the dollar. So this has been quite a marked reversal. And a rising dollar then has other impacts on other asset classes. So it tends to be rather bad for commodities. And we saw a big drop in some commodity prices. The copper price fell quite sharply, for example. The other place where expectations about interest rates show up is in the bond market, and here I'm afraid it does get a little bit complicated, because different types of bonds move in different ways. I mean, broadly speaking, if you expect interest rates to rise, then bonds which have a shorter term maturity, that are, you know, that are paid back within a shorter space of time, tend to rise in value. The longer term interest rates tend to be more impacted by expectations about inflation. And the feeling was that if the Fed was going to move and tighten policy, then that would probably have the effect of bringing down inflation. And so yields on those longer term bonds actually fell. So there was quite a bit of movement in the bond market as well.
And I guess just dwelling on the stock market, it's the case, as you said previously, Tom, the market is very, very tuned into monetary stimulus. And I guess the idea that some of that might be withdrawn has a particular effect on the stock market overall. But it had tended to reverse this trend that we'd been seeing with these more cyclical parts of the stock market doing well.
Yes, that's absolutely right, because what we've seen in recent months, really since the end of last year when we had the good news on the vaccinations and we had this sense that economies were opening up, was that the more cyclical parts of the stock market did extremely well. And the more sort of resilient, the growth parts of the market, things like the technology stocks, which are more reflective of a low interest rate environment, had done less well. So I think what we saw last week was a bit of a reversal of that trend, that people started to become less enthusiastic about those reopening stocks, and they actually became a bit more enthusiastic about those long-term growth stocks. And I think you've got to be careful not to overreact to these things. I mean, the underlying trends have not changed. The underlying picture is what we thought it was before. And it's a good argument, actually, for making sure that you have a nice balance between these different types of shares, because they are going to swing around a bit when you get movements like we had last week.
Yeah. And finally on this, Tom, I guess the path forward from here depends a lot on whether this spike in inflation that we're seeing is temporary or whether it's longer lasting, right? Because there are some short term effects which are pushing price rises higher.
Yes, there are. And I think that there's real divergence of views about whether what we're seeing is a short term spike in inflation or whether it's the beginning of something, more longer term. And we haven't. And we probably haven't got the time to discuss all the different factors there, but it is important. And my feeling is actually that this is a spike in inflation. I think that, you know, if you look at the charts, we are beginning actually to see some evidence that even now that inflation is beginning to roll over, but there's a huge amount of uncertainty here. And, you know, just as I was saying there with the difference between growth and value stocks, the importance of having a diversified portfolio, you know, we simply don't know whether this is a short term spike or a longer term thing. And so it's important to make sure that you're not taking a big bet on one of those situations coming to fruition, because quite frankly, we just don't know.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, well, Tom, let's leave that topic there for now, because there was also something else I wanted to pay attention to this week, which is the revival of rumours that the government could be about to raise tax on pensions. What's been going on there?
Yes, I mean, this is a story that reappears with regularity. I mean, for years now, it seems it normally happens in the run up to to a budget, we get this speculation about changes to the pension tax regime. So I suppose what's unusual about this is this story seems to have slightly come out of nowhere, because we're not expecting a budget until November. But the background to this, of course, is that the government has been spending very heavily in nursing the economy back into health. And whenever that happens, people say, well, you know, how is the government going to find the money to fill that big fiscal hole? And pension tax changes are a very obvious target for raising money. Why? Because the people that tend to benefit from the tax breaks associated with pensions, by most standards, are relatively wealthy people. So from a political point of view, particularly if you're a government which has become increasingly reliant on unfamiliar, untraditional voters, the temptation to target relatively rich people is very obvious. And I think so it comes as no surprise that we're beginning to see these stories come back onto the radar again.
Yes. Yeah. And as you say, it is all too familiar. We tend to get these rumours. I mean, I honestly think it's every year now, Tom, to be honest, that we get them ahead of budgets. I'll run through exactly what is being reported, at least. I mean, this is all based on anonymous briefings from Treasury officials in the press, and it has swung about a bit. At the weekend, we had briefings that, you know, in general, the pension system could be a target for some changes. You've got tax relief, which is the system which says you can have tax relief on your contributions at your marginal rate when you pay into a pension. But you've also got allowances like the lifetime allowance. That's the total that you can hold within a pension whilst tax relief applies. Now, I think the latest on this, Tom, is that the tax relief part of this equation, which is the often argued about part, I think they've backed away from that change. It's a really complicated thing to get into. There's a really worthwhile argument, as you say, about the fairness of that system, given that on the face of it, it advantages wealthier people more. So it's always likely to be a live issue, especially for a government that talks about levelling up. But the part of these rumours that seem to be a bit more persistent is around the lifetime allowance. Now, at the moment, we can all hold as much as, just over £1 million. I think it's £1,073,100 we can hold in a pension, and that's with tax relief still applying. The reports we've heard have suggested that could come down to something like £900,000 or even £800,000. We should say, shouldn't we, Tom, that you'd still need to be pretty wealthy in the big scheme of things to put that much away. But it's striking how far that limit has come down over the years. It was much higher than that a few years back, went to £1 million, rose once or twice with inflation, and now they're talking about cutting it again. So the pension system does, you know, it is becoming potentially less generous.
It's becoming a lot less generous. I mean, you're absolutely right to point out the fact that lifetime allowance used to be much higher, and if it were to fall to 900 or 800,000, then it would be sort of half the rate that it was a few years ago. And the other important point to make about that is that with interest rates being low and the returns that you can earn on assets in a sort of reasonably prudent and safe way being relatively low, £800,000 sounds like quite a lot of money, but in pension terms, it's not a huge amount of money. I mean, you know, we've talked in the past about what is a prudent sort of withdrawal rate from a pension pot. Let's say that you said that 4% was a reasonable withdrawal rate, and I think that you've pointed this out in pieces that you've written on this. You know, £800,000 would give you an income of just £32,000 a year on the basis of 4%. Now that is not that is not an enormous sum of money. So I think, you know, the government would say, look, it's not our job to provide tax breaks for the middle classes. It's the job of the pension system to keep people out of poverty in their old age, and to ensure that the state is not responsible for keeping people in their old age. That's a fair point. But the counter argument is that, you know, one thing that the government arguably should be doing is encouraging people to make provision for their old age and to save for their retirement. And the more that the pension system is chipped away at and perhaps even more importantly, is made to look unreliable and not something that you can count on in future, you know, is a negative, I think.
Indeed. And just turning to the sort of practical side of this, it's always been the case, but it would be even more the case if a change like this happened on the lifetime allowance, that anyone who believes that they might rub up against that limit should really get on top of their pension planning, and potentially at quite a young age as well. Because, I mean, listen, we'll say it again, you would have to be earning high amounts at young ages for this to apply. But it's also true to say that some people could put large amounts into a pension at a young age. And because that lifetime allowance applies not just to your contributions, but to the total growth on your pot inside your pension, you might have to stop your contributions at quite a young age, because simply you know that, or you can expect that they will rise and take you up to that limit. It means you have to be quite strategic, and it should just be a call to arms, really, for everyone to just keep on top of their pension planning, see where they are against their own targets. I mean, listen, if you are if you've got a lifetime allowance problem, that's a first world problem to have. We should say that. But, you know, keep on top of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and you're right to make that point that, you know, no one is going to shed too many tears for people breaching their lifetime allowance and having, you know, what looks like, you know, access to a fairly comfortable retirement. But, you know, the counter argument to that is, you know, should we really be penalising people for doing the right thing, for being prudent, for saving, you know, throughout their working life? Arguably not, but it is what it is. And if you're likely to face those questions, then absolutely, there's no time for getting on top of those problems like the present.
Indeed. OK, well, Tom, let's leave it there for now. That's all we have time for. But thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.